You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil, and the Miami Heat have won 9 straight games. They beat the Atlanta Hawks 116-93, tying the largest margin of victory for any win this season, not to mention the biggest win of this current win streak. We got our first blowout of the win streak, David.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta, pretty good team. They're 28-22 heading into, or 28-20 heading into Miami. They've made some changes there when they jettisoned Kyle Korver to the Cavaliers, but they got Mike Dunleavy back. And look, the core of their team is still Paul Millsap, Dennis Schroeder, and of course Dwight Howard. And somehow they came in here to Miami thinking that they might get away with a win, and that was not what this current version of the Heat team had in mind. So pulling away a nice straight victory. Unbelievable.
They won every single quarter. I mean, they tied the fourth quarter, but that was garbage time, right? Like, they got out to – they even extended their lead in the beginning of the fourth quarter. So they won – they dominated the whole game from start to finish, essentially. And after the game, Goran Dragic talking with Jason Jackson in that winner's circle that they do, he mentioned how, like, the Heat got out to a really fast start. The bench came in, extended the lead.
They did.
And after that, Dragic said, you know, if we do that, this is going to make it a lot easier for everybody. And almost every player on that roster was delivering on all cylinders. I mean, at the end of the first quarter, Luke Babbitt was the leading scorer of the game, not just for the Heat. He had 8 points. That was leading scorers for the whole game after the first quarter. And there's a few players on the Heat at 7, 5, 4 points. I mean, everybody was chipping in. The ball movement was probably the best it's been all season. And let's see. I mean, they had 23 assists on 45 made field goals. That's really good. That's more than 50% of their field goals were assisted. That's a really, really good rate. They dominated the paint 54-36. They got 10 more fast break points than the Hawks. The game was played at a quick pace. I mean, they took more threes and made more threes than Atlanta, as has been a trend during the streak. They were able to hold Atlanta to a low shooting percentage from three-point range, just below 27%. I mean, this is kind of the formula that the Heat have put together here, and when we talk about them turning a corner and them having a formula, that was on full display in this game.
You know, they started off a little shaky, you know, not to discredit what it was that Dragic said. They started off 7-2, right? That was the score. Right. And then Miami just blew it open with an 11-0 run. And from that point, you kind of saw them kind of realize, oh, yeah, this is how we've been playing over the last few games. This is what we're capable of. And Atlanta just was taken aback. They got, I mean, I know as cliche as it might sound, they got punched in the mouth and didn't know how to respond after that, because from that point forward, they just never really seemed to mount any kind of a comeback or have an answer on how to limit Goran Dragic, who, you know, was particularly good, as he has been throughout the whole month and throughout the whole win streak. And you're right about the passing. There was just, it was uber crisp. They were just moving the ball around consistently. And that same kind of energy that they displayed on offense, to me, they showed it on defense as well. As we were talking about this before we jumped on the pod, you know, they're just constantly switching, running guys off the three-point line, holding Atlanta to 26.9% shooting on the night, less than 27%. That's, I mean, Atlanta may not be a great three-point shooting team, but that's astronomically low.
And that's what they want to do. They want to hit threes. This reminded me a lot of that Rockets win that kicked off this 9 straight winning streak, because what the Rockets like to do is they want to take threes and they want to get to the rim, and they don't want to fiddle around with the mid-range. And the Hawks are very, you know, they're Spurs East. They're trying to do the same thing under Mike Budenholzer. They want to take threes. They want to get to the rim. That's what they want to do. Miami specializes on protecting the rim with Whiteside and Willie Reed, and taking away running guys off that three-point line. And so this, and when they're able to execute like they were, they're able to beat teams like the Hawks, like the Rockets, teams that, you know, are modern NBA teams in every, like, in all of the senses that we want and what we want to see aesthetically. But the Heat match up well with those teams.
Yeah, and the rim protection didn't just come from Whiteside either. 2 blocks from Deion Waiters, 3 blocks from James Johnson. Luke Babbitt with a block. That's something we haven't seen in the typical Babbitt stat line. You know, the 8 points that he picked up in the first quarter, of course, the only points he picked up for the whole game. But they were at a big point there, and it seemed like it was within the flow of the game. He contributed early, and he didn't have to do much else. And to be honest with you, I wasn't that depressed about his defense on Paul Millsap. Millsap shot really, really badly, 4 of 13, 9 points overall, just 0 of 3 from three-point range. This is a guy who's played at an all-star level, who's been a random Heat killer throughout his career.
He is an all-star, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Did I not say he was an all-star?
You said he was playing at an all-star level. That could be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. He is, yeah.
He is a
four-time all-star. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And somehow Babbitt's length and positioning, he just seemed to be able to figure out how to play Millsap. Now, he did have one good duck and under move near the basket and a couple other good shots here and there. But again, 4 of 13 shooting for a guy like Millsap, that's very, very impressive. And I think it was not just Babbitt. You know, James Johnson was able to match up well with him. Willie Reed, when he was in the game, too. It was a gang-type defense mentality, and it was just very, very effective on limiting a team that shoots pretty well most of the time. Even Dwight Howard, what did he finish with? Just 6 points, 2 of 6 points shooting. You know, not a guy who's going to put up a lot of points at this point in his career, but, you know, Miami just seemed to make it uncomfortable for everybody, and that's what they've been doing at such a high level during the win streak.
I mean, maybe a month at the beginning of January, this is a game that the Hawks circle on their calendar as a win. I mean, the last game they played was Sunday against the Knicks. So granted, that went to 4 overtimes, and they played over like an extra hour worth of time, but they had plenty of rest. And, you know, that was something I thought of when Luke Babbitt, like you were talking about, was defending Paul Millsap. I mean, he wasn't giving up any position. He wasn't giving up any ground for so many of those possessions. And you're like, wow, Millsap just looks really tired. And he did play a lot on Sunday.
60 minutes, yeah.
But he's got so much, I mean, that's so much rest between Sunday and Wednesday. I don't know how much can that factor in, and even to a veteran like Millsap. Like, you just got to give Babbitt some credit, I guess. And I know I'm the, you know, maybe the leader in bashing Babbitt whenever I get a chance, just because it's kind of fun and he's a dork. But it's, you know, you got to give him credit. Anyway, I thought that really, other than the strategic stuff about how Miami likes to run guys off the three-point line, protect the paint, etc., what really stood out to me was how Miami was able to win their individual matchups. I thought James Johnson, when he was in, getting defended by Kent Bazemore or Mike Muscala or Chris Humphries, whoever it might be, he won that matchup consistently. But moreover, the backcourt of Dragic and Waiters dominated this game. I mean, just completely dominated Atlanta's backcourt of Dennis Schroeder and Hardaway Jr. It was just, they, defensively, Schroeder and Hardaway Jr. couldn't stop Dragic and Waiters from getting anywhere they wanted. And as we know, Dragic has stepped up his defense. Waiters is a good defender. He's a strong wing defender. And they just basically shut those guys down. Both, they combined for 22 points. Dragic, Waiters, 47 points. I mean, when there's that kind of advantage in the backcourt, chances are you're going to have a game that plays out like this.
I thought Waiters was guarding Bazemore for most of the night. Was I mistaken there? Because I thought most of the matchups
he was.
They had Magruder switched onto Hardaway, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, which is interesting because I guess they were more worried, or Spoelstra was most worried about Hardaway kind of going off. You know, if he has one of those hot shooting nights where he starts to feel it, maybe, you know, that's why they assigned Magruder on him.
Or maybe Bazemore likes to post up some and do some stuff like that, and Waiters is probably,
he has the heft to be able to defend him a little better. They were kind of going at it. I don't know if you noticed that. They kind of were not necessarily jawing at each other, maybe more like a kind of like a mutual respect kind of thing, I guess, because I saw some chatter there between them, and that was kind of interesting. But
I love that.
Yeah, and Waiters was definitely feeling it. I mean, he had a couple – he had one mid-range shot off the elbow there where he just kind of held the pose a little bit longer and kind of like – lowered his shoulder down and just say, come on, that's just what I do. And it's just unbelievable that he's gone to this point after that. A couple of game winners. Now he's feeling it so badly. And it's another strong shooting night, 9 of 15, 2 of 4 from three-point range. You know, you seem to expect those shots to fall more often than not now. Are you still at a point where watching Waiters put up those shots, you're kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop? You think we're going to see a reversion? I mean, I've seen a lot of people in basketball Twitter, not necessarily Miami Heat fans, that are just kind of looking at Waiters and say, this is a fluke. It's going to end at some point sooner.
No, I'm not. I think this is the player he is. He's got an opportunity here. Look, he went 9-15 tonight, but there's been games on this win streak where he's going 9-18s, you know, where he's not shooting 50% from the field, where he's not this uber efficient, where he's missing three-pointers. But I do expect him to make them. Like, he is a shooter. He is a scorer. And, like, he turned a corner in the playoffs for the Thunder last year. He just was on a team with Westbrook and Durant. Like, he wasn't going to get 15 shots a game. I mean, he was lucky if he was getting 5 or 6 shots a game. So you give a player like Waiters an opportunity like this, and it's the first time he's had this opportunity since his rookie year in Cleveland, which was a disaster because the Cavs sucked. So, and he was not a good rookie. And I think he's learned a lot. Like, that piece I did from Miami Heat Tip-Off Mag, he talked about watching Kyrie Irving and LeBron James and Westbrook and Durant and how they go to work and how they're able, and how, like, Russell Westbrook and Durant are the first guys in the gym. They're, you know, shoot around will start at 9 o'clock. They're in there at 7 o'clock, you know, 2 hours before shoot around. How LeBron is able to take care of his body, which is something Waiters has improved throughout his career. All these guys, and, you know, maybe he learned something from that. He learned something from that playoff run. He started, it's not like this is all of a sudden. He turned a corner last season for the Oklahoma City. We had all, I mean, there was a bunch of articles in the playoff from bloggers and writers in last season's playoffs about how Waiters has turned a corner. And now we're pretending like that didn't happen just because he switched teams. He switches teams. He's on the Heat. He's unhealthy. He misses 20 games in a row. He gets healthy, and then he's back doing what he basically did with Oklahoma City with an increased usage rate, therefore the increased numbers and the attention. Sure. I don't think that he's not Kobe Wade, but he's a good player, man. And him and Dragic is a great backcourt.
Yeah, they are a very good partnership. We had that podcast before the season even started with a friend of the program, Matt Moore, where we talked about narratives and Dion Waiters and how they apply to him in particular. And I think, you know, that's still what the evidence that it's still evidence in what you're describing there, and how people kind of dismissed whatever positives he displayed during the first during the playoffs last year. And then during the start of this season, considering how bad things were going in Miami, it's easy to say, oh, this Miami roster is a mess. They've got Dion Waiters on there. Oh, he's going to be terrible, et cetera. But when this turnaround happens, and you know, there are people who watched him in Cleveland, people who are hopeful that he was going to be able to turn it around at some point in his career. And they're still a little pessimistic. They think that he's gone through runs similar to this early on, especially when he was there with the Cavaliers, and that he's still capable of those kinds of runs, but that he might, you know, regress at some point soon. I think you're right. I tend to agree with you that he's found a place where he feels most comfortable. It's a partnership that's working very well.
That's exactly why he picked Miami, right? Before the year, he said, I could have made more money elsewhere.
This was the best fit for me.
Exactly. And look, it's not unreasonable for a player coming out of Syracuse, or I guess it doesn't matter where he went to college, coming out of college, entering the league in a crappy situation, and then thinking that, you know, yeah, at Syracuse, he did ask his teammates reportedly to call him Kobe Wade. Like, is he ridiculous at times? Absolutely. But even in this Hawks game, I mean, he stared at his hand. I'm not even sure.
His left hand.
Not even the one he shoots over. It's not even the one he shoots with, right? It's just like.
No, it wasn't that one particular shot. He got off a shot of Dwayne Bembry.
So it was
impossible shot.
Right. And he's staring at his hand. He's like, I don't even know. And it's just like, look, he's ridiculous. He's so fun. He is so fun. And he's got an opportunity to stretch out his wings now.
The guys on the sideline, Dragic was doing it. Dragic had a left hand like, yo, this is what the left hand represents.
Right.
It's dangerous. How could you not fear it? Look at the left hand. It's amazing. Yeah. It was incredible to see that kind of reaction for that. And this is when, like, they were starting to push that lead up into the 20-point range. It was just incredible.
Waiters, it seems to me, at 20, like, he had goals. Right. And he learned lessons. Like, I really do think he's learned stuff. And is that so impossible? Like, we tend to look at these players as like, oh, Dion Waiters, like, he does the jazz hands and asks for the basketball all the time. This is who he is. And you just corner them into being that forever. It's like, that dude was like, when that happened, he was like 22 years old, 23 years old. I mean, it's been a long time. He's been through he's switched teams twice since then. Like, you know, he's been around all-stars, some of the best players in the league. He's learning stuff, and maybe he's matured. And heck, like, the dude had goals. He wanted to find the right opportunity for him after not being in what he probably thought were the best opportunities for him. And he's it looks like so far he's on the right track to accomplish his goals. And I commend him for that. Let's talk a little bit. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, one of the things that gets kind of swept in the rug in the whole narrative with Waiters, the negative narrative with Waiters, is that, you know, we're ignoring the kind of positive impact he has on his teammates, especially on Dragic. Think about how much he's, during this win streak, when Waiters has been playing at such a high level, he's allowed Dragic to do things much more easily, much more freely. And I mean, Dragic spoke about that in the article that we referenced in yesterday's podcast from Anthony Chiang of the Palm Beach Post. But, you know, it's such a great partnership. And you know, if Dragic plays well, you kind of say, oh, he's just going back to that form that he displayed a couple of seasons ago when he was, you know, a third team All-NBA player with the Suns, et cetera. But, you know, he wasn't that player with Dwayne Wade, and he was just as healthy and had just as many opportunities, but it's just a much better fit. So having a guy like Waiters play off of Dragic and vice versa, it's mutually beneficial, and we're starting to see the benefits of it.
I mean, he's shooting 41% from three-point range. He made the first four three-pointers he took against the Hawks tonight. That's what Waiters allows him to do. He allows him to play off the ball. And Dragic, vice versa, allows Waiters to play off the ball a little bit. And he can cut and get into the post and do stuff like that he wants to do. And so you're right. Like, having Waiters on this roster, all of a sudden Dragic doesn't have to carry the load. He doesn't have to facilitate for everybody. And that just improves the spacing and everything that's happening with this team. I mean, the Dragic and Waiters backcourt, this is something that you can build on. I really believe that. I mean, you think about those Phoenix Suns that had Dragic and Eric Bledsoe, and yeah, they went about the wrong way. They went the wrong way about building that team. The Heat have a chance to kind of see that and see what didn't work. Like, for example, doubling down on all of your guards and just signing more guards for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Fill out that team with players that work with those guys. And we're getting way ahead of I'm getting way ahead of myself here, but it's... The point being is that Dragic and Waiters, this is working. And that's why I don't think it's a fluke, because systematically it's something that just works and it makes sense. And it's something we've seen before, and it's something we're seeing right now consistently. Speaking of getting ahead of ourselves, I want to talk about the playoffs, because we got to really start thinking hard about that. But before that, just want to give a shout out to Sebastian21, who left us a review on iTunes. We asked on, I think, yesterday's show.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. We need 11 new reviews by the end of the week. And so that's what we were asking for, because we hadn't gotten a single new review on the show in the year of 2017. So we wanted to get 11 new ones, I guess, because of I'm blanking on the word here. Because Deion Waiters wears number 11, that's why.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Dialing it up to 11 for Deion.
Exactly.
11 reviews by
11 for
week,
Deion. So. Hashtag 11 for Deion. So Sebastian21 was the first review that came in. So we wanted to give him a shout out. He said, I discovered the show about 2 weeks ago. Excellent podcast if you want substantial daily updates on the Heat. Fire emoji. Hashtag Wade County. Hashtag Philly Cheese. Hashtag 8 straight.
So, yeah.
Thanks, Sebastian.
Well, gotta change it to 9 straight now.
Yeah, 9 straight. Hashtag 9 straight. Hashtag turn up for 11 or whatever we said before. So the playoffs. Look, we're recording this immediately after the game. Charlotte plays Golden State tonight in Oakland, so it's a late game. But if Charlotte loses that game, Miami is now 3 games out of the playoffs. I mean, holy shit. Right?
it's something we would never have dreamed possible. Yeah, I mean, 11-30, you're thinking, oh, we're in it to get a top pick in the draft, possibly. We're looking, trading Dragic. We're hearing rumors about Goran being shopped to Orlando, right, et cetera. Maybe
blowing
even
it
moving
up,
Whiteside.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a team built for the future. All of a sudden, Deion Waiters comes back. Him and Dragic established that partnership. Everything starts going in a completely different manner. 9 wins later, now you're 10 games below 500, and you're starting to think, wow, we can creep up a little bit more. And we looked ahead to the schedule. You know, we don't want to jump too far ahead of ourselves, but, you know, there's 7 games left before the All-Star break. And then once that All-Star break is happening, then that's when the NBA's trade deadline is. February 23rd, I believe, is what you said?
Yes.
And that's right before their next game after the All-Star break, Friday, February 24th. So let's say in between now and our last game before the All-Star break, which is Wednesday, February 15th, we play 7 more games against Philadelphia twice, Minnesota, Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Orlando, and Houston. Now, we look at all those teams, with the exception of Houston, all 6 of the other games are eminently winnable. Orlando's struggling. Philadelphia's inconsistent. If there's a game there where they don't have Joel Embiid in the lineup, right, we might be able to capitalize on that. Milwaukee has lost, I believe, 8 of their last 9, something along those lines.
Yeah, they're struggling, yeah.
Yeah, Brooklyn is Brooklyn. They're going to play hard and intense for, you know, 3 quarters and ultimately collapse just because they just don't have that kind of firepower. And Minnesota, you know, for all the offensive firepower they have, they're still struggling the defensive end.
Yeah.
And I think even though the game is at Minnesota, like I said, pretty winnable. So we're looking all of a sudden, like out of the next 7 games, let's say, as we talked about before, you could possibly go 5-2 over the next 7 games. Now you're 25-32, 7 games under 500, probably 2 games out of an 8th seed in the playoffs. That changes the narrative quite a bit and how you proceed forward with a trade deadline in the following week.
You could what was looking like a seller could become a buyer, right?
And correct.
I mean, and just quickly, like, right before their streak, the Heat had lost more than twice as many games at home than they had won.
Right.
If they beat the 76ers at home on Saturday, they'll be 500 at home. That is a remarkable turnaround. They're 12-13 at home right now after this win against the Hawks.
Unbelievable.
But to talk about that deadline stuff, I mean, you're absolutely right. Look, if this team goes into the All-Star break going 4-3, 5-2, 6-1 on this next stretch here, I mean, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of these 7 games are going to be on the road. So that's going to be tough. Sure. It's always hard to win on the road. But like you're saying, I mean, at least it's not, you're not on the road against the Spurs. You're not on the road against the Warriors. You're on the road against Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Minnesota, Philadelphia. Like, these are the road games you want, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, they get into the All-Star break and they're able to look at the standings and be even 1, 2, 3 games out of the eighth seed. I do wonder if Pat Riley's going to be like, maybe if we make a deal here to get one extra player and make a playoff run here. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
And I think the quandary for a lot of Heat fans is, you know, what's the point? If you make a run for the playoffs now, if you don't mortgage your future, you know, or by trading, or if you don't trade away players and blow it all up and try to acquire a big draft pick, you're hurting your future. But that's not necessarily a guarantee either. You could go into this and you could lose a great number of games. You could trade away really good players. You could get a high draft pick, and all of a sudden that draft pick doesn't pan out. And what do you have left? I think it's always better to create a winning culture, and I think you can actually start to look at the players they currently have as potential pieces of this rebuild. I mean, it's time to change the way that we look at things. There's no right or perfect way of building a team. And while you might think, oh, it's by acquiring as many draft picks as possible, that's not necessarily the case. You could have a lot of draft picks that could suck. You could
look at what happened tonight. I mean, before this streak, when we were talking about, look, you got to blow it up. I mean, not you and I, but just like the general you.
In general,
like,
sure.
Yeah, saying like it's time to blow it up, whatever. Like, nobody's going to play here. And we kind of were listening to that and considering it. And that was a big part of our conversation on this show. You know, we were talking about how a free agent wouldn't come to Miami. And look, right, the CBA throws a big wrench in that. However, there are still going to be maybe not Steph Curry's and Boogie Cousins that enter the market, but there's going to be other free agents. There's going to be other players that enter the market. Free agency isn't just going away. And if you're Paul Millsap and you're on that bench and you look as miserable as you did at the end of that Hawks game and you're like, are they shopping me? Are they not shopping me? And I'm going to be a free agent after this year. This Heat team looks like they're having fun. They're staring at their left hands. That looks like a ball. Like, I want to stare at my left hand. Miami seems dope. I've been playing this team for years now. They don't have Chris Bosh. I could be their Chris Bosh. I mean, what's to say that Millsap isn't looking at the Heat tonight and thinking to himself, they're winning. They're rolling over us. This might be an option for me come summertime. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you're going to chase the best opportunity to win. You're going to chase money. You're going to chase a comfortable place for you to continue to grow or mine your craft or whatever, however you want to phrase it.
Right.
But Miami, look, and the thing that we kept talking about as well is the fact that if nothing else, this has shown that there is most definitely a strong culture in this team. I mean, that Spoelstra has all of a sudden propelled himself to potential coach of the year talk because the way he's been able to get this team on the same page, to work together, to abandon any kind of, you know, individual pursuits and to just work as a team, that's a strong selling point for any potential free agents. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could always say, look, you have the opportunity to be the best player, but it's the best player on a team that backs each other up and that continues to build towards a common goal, and that's winning. You're going to find a way to win. Look, if you can turn the roster through all the injuries that they've had this season and somehow position yourself for a playoff pursuit, even if it ultimately falls short, that's still something that's appealing to free agents. And I think that's a strong selling point, to be honest with you. So it's time to consider the fact that the team as it's currently constructed might be the best thing for Miami to continue their rebuild.
And they're playing a fun brand of basketball. This is what we kind of hoped that they would look like.
Yeah, it did seem bleak there.
It did, right? It was just boring and just not fun to watch. But this team is playing faster. They played at a pace over 100 tonight against the Hawks, and they've been doing that consistently throughout this streak. And if this is what they want to do, if they're gonna run guys off 3-point lines, so now you have a running defense that likes to create turnovers and Whiteside's blocking shots and ending possessions with rebounds and shot blocking, and they're trying to get out in the fast break and doing all these things. That's a fun brand of basketball to play. Eric Spoelstra is a coach that players want to play for. They look at him as somebody that, I mean, just this waiters thing in general is tremendous branding for Eric Spoelstra. He's like, I fixed waiters. Like, I fixed Dion freaking Waiters, guys. Like, I could fix any of you guys. I can make anybody better. That's a great selling point for this organization. And look, I do want to just kind of temper things and go the other way. It's been a half a month, right? The winning streak started on January 17th. It's been half a month. It's 9 games. I'm not ready to say that this team is ready to go to the playoffs, but it is something we need to talk about because it's in reach. Like, mathematically, it's crazy. That said, a team with less than a 500 record could very well grab the 8th seed in the East. So it's not like the Heat would be a great team all of a sudden. I do know, so I want to temper things that way. However, look, this is a team that is doing this without Justice Winslow, without Josh Richardson for a big part of the season. I don't know if Josh Richardson is coming back this year. Who knows? We have really got no word on how severe this injury is.
He's on the sideline. We saw him on the sideline today. Yeah. And Justice is not, which is kind of bizarre, right, that he's not on the sideline?
Yeah, I think that's – I mean, when a guy gets ruled out for the season, I don't think they usually are they?
I don't know. I mean, it's not like it's a catastrophic injury. He could have just stayed there. I don't know.
It's a shoulder injury, and it's cramped there, and he probably doesn't want to be rubbing shoulders with people. I'm going to say that's what the deal is. But he comes back next year for a team that wasn't playing like this when he was here. And it's not to any fault of his own. Winslow would fit perfectly with this team. He loves to move the ball, drive in and kick out and do things. And he's as good as a shooter as Luke Babbitt has been this whole year. He's as good as a shooter as Rodney Magruder is this whole season for the balance of it. And he could do a lot of those impact winning plays that Spoelstra loves to talk about. You throw Winslow on this team, that's like a free agent addition. You know what I mean? That's like a new player that you add onto this roster.
Right.
As well as Richardson, depending on when he comes back. Josh McRoberts was playing well. If they can't move his contract, like, I don't know. He fits in that power forward pretty nicely here. Look, I'm just saying that maybe this team isn't as far as away as we thought, but also, just to roll it back a second, like, let's make sure that we're tempering expectations here. This isn't to say that this winning streak might have put the Heat out of the running for Markel Fultz or Lonzo Ball, but the Heat are in that group of anybody between the 4th pick in the draft and like the 11th. There's a lot of teams here with like 25 to 30 losses on the record already. that could easily just, you know, one four-game, five-game losing streak, one, you know, losing 7 out of 10 kind of streak can plummet you right back into a top 5 or 6 pick in this draft. So I just want to temper things a little bit.
What if those players that we've lost to injuries, like you described, Winslow, McRoberts, and Richardson, what if those were just like pruning the hedges and now all of a sudden this is a much better version of the team because those were the players kind of slowing things down, bogging things down, is particularly offensively. Isn't that a very real possibility that they were asking too much of Winslow, and as a result of having him on there and the expectation of a lottery draft mm-hmm. pick and seeing him as the future of the team, maybe it was just if you're welcoming him back next year, maybe it's okay to welcome him back as a complimentary player, not necessarily as a guy who's going to be the main facilitator on offense?
100%. I think, you know, this team learned a lot about itself and what about like what the individual players could do and maybe what their limitations are because there's been so many injuries, but this team is relatively healthy. And they're looking at this, you know, with Waiters was never 100% like fully healthy when Winslow was. And I think that was a big thing. And now that they've kind of stumbled onto this Dragic Waiters backcourt that's been so dominant, they might look at Winslow and say, we don't need you to do all those things. Like, we need you to be like what you were as a rookie.
Play like a taller Rodney Magruder and play at the four?
Yeah, play great defense and make winning plays. And just do all those in-between things for us and just kind of come along at your own pace. This is the best-case scenario for Winslow.
Yeah, that's an interesting argument there. I mean, it's I agree 100%. I think that you can bring back a guy of his skill set, and as long as it's in a very good complementary role, he's a nice fit for the team as currently constructed. And
he's,
right.
He's also the guy that, like, look, if James Johnson, he's made a lot of money for himself this year. He's in a contract year. If James Johnson gets a big deal from somewhere else that Miami is not willing to offer, you bring in Winslow in that James Johnson spot, and that is a very cheap alternative because Winslow's still on that rookie scale deal. He's under contract for a few more years. That to me, like we talked about on the surprise mailbag this week, who we thought was more likely to stay between Waiters and Johnson, who he would be more likely to retain. And we both agreed Waiters. And part of the reason I say that is I don't know if the Heat look at a player on this roster and say that could be our Deion Waiters, but I think they look at Winslow and say that could be our James Johnson. At least now we have a vision for him. We have a role for him to just step into. James Johnson was playing that role last year when we got good, when we turned a corner. Winslow will play that role for us next year at 20% whatever James Johnson gets paid.
Yeah, and I get the feeling that Winslow, you know, we've talked with him, we've seen what he's like. I get the feeling that he'd be willing to accept that. Not everybody goes into the league necessarily wanting or able to become a superstar, whatever that term implies. I think there is certainly something more than worthwhile of accepting a role playing position, you know, or as a complementary fit. And a guy like him, he might be more comfortable as he was in his rookie season, a guy who was just coming off the bench, injecting energy occasionally and really, really good defense. He didn't have to play a whole hell of a lot of minutes because they had Luol Deng there and Chris for a few games, Joe Johnson, et cetera. You weren't depending or relying on him as much. He seemed uncomfortable at the start of the season. We were hoping he'd make that turnaround. There were, you know, occasional flashes. You know, the health was an issue. Obviously, he missed a bunch of games. Then he came back and missed, you know, obviously, and it was ruled out for the rest of the season. But you want him to be in a comfortable spot where he doesn't feel like he's overexerting or overtaxing himself. And he's a good worker. I think he's humble enough where he'll accept a complimentary role and he'll understand that ultimately the goal is to win, and you can win a lot of games by filling a role similar to what James Johnson is doing this season.
Speaking of James Johnson, just to kind of bring it back to that Hawks game, he got into a scuffle at the end of the game.
He did. Hard foul.
Yeah. What's his face? Through Whiteside.
Torian Prince?
Yeah, Torian Prince threw Whiteside to the ground in a very
It was a hard foul. It looked like a bad throw. I don't know that it was fully intentional. He just kind of wrapped him up as Whiteside went up for a layup, and he landed very awkwardly.
Yeah, and then they ruled it a flagrant 2 on Torian Prince. But after that foul, James Johnson went up to Prince, and he was like, that's not going to happen here. And
well, he flew into him. He was at that free throw line. He hopped over Whiteside's supine body laying across the floor, and he just flew over him.
He was ready to go black belt on Taurean Prince. I mean, he was ready.
Did you see Spoelstra fly off the bench? Spoelstra flew off the bench, and he was like holding his waist. It reminded me of Jeff Van Gundy.
It was great.
Run for your life kind of thing.
Anyway, James Johnson was given a technical for it, so we're still waiting word on what happens with him as far as further consequences.
Given a technical and ejected, for the game.
Technical and ejected, you're right. So maybe a suspension in his future, we'll see. Hopefully not. Hopefully we can keep this 9-game win streak rolling into a 10-game win streak, but we'll see. The Heat's next game is Saturday versus the Philadelphia 76ers, another home game. A chance to get 500 at home, that would be something. That's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. If you aren't subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes. And what did we say about turning it up to 11 for waiters?
Yeah, that's basically it. Dial it up to 11.
We want 11 reviews. 11 for waiters. 11 reviews. We already got one from Sebastian. We need 10 more. So let's make it happen. That's it. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.